I saw a study recently that talked about the rate of the proportion of functions being provided by software in a vehicle, in a passenger car. Back in the 50s and 60s, the electronics was pretty simplistic and pretty hardwired. It was a very small percentage that was just electronics and the logic associated with it. And then later, in the 70s and 80s, we started adding different types of logic and different types of software, firmware-type systems that would control parts of the system, say the windshield wiper delay. And it could be done electronically, or it could be done with a small piece of code. Variety of different bits and pieces of the vehicle then got converted over to being software-controlled versus being electronically controlled or mechanically controlled. Aircraft have gone through a similar transition of being fly-by-wire, where it was physically a wire connected to the stick of the pilot was holding to control the flaps and air surfaces of the wings, and his foot pedals controlled the rudder. To today, it's all computer controlled, and it might be some redundancy built into there, but I think it's pretty much run by a series of sensors picking up the pilot's intentions and then translating that into the controls that affect the direction and flight of the aircraft. The basic idea, though, is that software is becoming much, much more important in aircraft and vehicles and in everyday products. Much of the functionality of our smartphones are through software applications running on a common single base of hardware. So more and more products are getting software. More and more things are failing because of software. Hence, it's a reliability concern for us. So how do we go about evaluating software such that we get the target that we're looking for, whatever that may be, for the reliability performance of the overall system? Now, there's a number of different approaches to software, and this segment is really just going to be a cursory look at a number of different systems. And software is a bit out of my particular domain, but I know that it's got a range of different approaches, and some of which are pretty useful, and some of which are still having to prove themselves. There's also a range of different ways of going about creating software. I'm predominantly a hardware-type person, and I appreciate the system-level approach that incorporates software. So I've always taken the view, rather jocularly, of blaming whatever goes wrong, we can blame on software. Well, it also turns out in a lot of cases that we could also solve it much quicker and much more inexpensively than redesigning the hardware by simply changing some of the software. So it's becoming a significant part of our products, and so we really should appreciate how to evaluate the software so that we get the performance we're looking for. Now, what I do know about software is that in its product development process, the specifications or requirement stage, the early stage where you're defining what exactly you want the software to do, is where you really need to spend the bulk of the time, is making sure that the functionality and the performance and the basic logic is sound. And there's a new series of design reviews and ways to check and double check the requirement sections. And in some cases, we even run simulations to find out if the basic logic and set of functions will make sense. So the one approach is similar to setting those requirements. What is that requirement? What is the software supposed to do? And then looking down at all of the different elements that are contributing to that function occurring. And so we test it at a system level, and then if we have problems, say, in the power management firmware section, then we look at that in more detail, do a more detailed review and product testing just on that block of code, and then so on, down cascading down from the top to find and fix any of the issues that are leading to failures at the system level. Now, a bottoms-up approach is naturally just the opposite of that. We break out the software into its various components and constituents, different blocks of code or different functions, whichever way, and then we evaluate those functions individually. So if I need to turn on a green light when the system has been powered and that's controlled by software, then let's check that series of that set of code and logic and make sure that it occurs when the light is lit when it's supposed to and not when it's not supposed to. Now, that's often done just straight by electronics. It's probably not the best of examples. But let's say it's checking a database, or it's tabulating information, or it's looking for a user input and converting that to commands. Each of those things could be a separate basic function, a fundamental lower level function. So in a bottoms-up approach, we'd evaluate each of those functions independently, writing test cases to evaluate them at a discrete level, and then aggregate those into their subsystems and then eventually up into the system, and evaluating it at each level to make sure that the integration is also working. So at the top level, we look for integration in every other kind of problem and then work our way down. Bottoms up, we make sure we have solid blocks that are well vetted out, and then combine them so that we can look for those integration errors more precisely. Black box versus white box. Black box is we don't really step through and evaluate the code. It either provides the function or not. White box is we open it up, take a look at more of the details. And this is running off of basic memory, so please correct me if you've got a software experience, maybe give me a call and we can chat some more about what are the more modern approaches. But there's a number of different approaches. Do I treat the block of code as an aggregate, the black box, or do I break it down into either functions or different sub-elements of that? So similar to top-down, bottom-up, but a little different approach of how much revealing we do and what level of error codes we're looking for. So a couple different approaches. One that I like and has just a little bit of math involved with it is that if we're running a block of code or a system that has a bunch of software in it, and let's say it's a pretty large package of software, a million lines of codes these days is not a big software system. But we know that every line of code has multiple spots within it that could have even just something as simple as formatting errors. But there's also things like logic errors and structural errors and a variety of other ways that software can lead to failures. But the one way to tell if your system of design reviews and evaluations is working or not is get an understanding of, well, how many potential software errors or bugs are still within the software package itself. So this is similar to what we've done, or not we, but when I was growing up in Wisconsin, every year they would do a count or a census of the wild deer, the white-tailed deer that were in the state. And it's not like they lined them all up and you know, put a mark a die on each one of them that they counted so they wouldn't get double counted. It just wasn't possible to find and identify every single resident of Wisconsin from the white-tail deer population. So what they did is they would go out and catch and tag some number of the deer, and I think it was on the order of a couple hundred across the state. And then they'd come back at some other time and use a similar process for finding deer and identifying them and tagging them, but they would take note of which ones had already been tagged, and then looking at the proportion of the ones found with tags to the ones found without tags, with a couple of assumptions. They would be able to say, well, here's how many total deer are in the state's population. So they knew how many had tags, and so they knew the population that were already tagged. And then in the second round, they would find some subset of that number, which would then allow them to calculate out using equal proportions how many total were in the population. So by analogy, what we do is we know that there's some finite number of defects within the software code, but we don't know how many, and we don't know if we found all of them or not. So what you do is you introduce into the software some finite number of defects. And through the normal process of product testing, whether it's regression testing or code reviews or a variety of other techniques that are used to evaluate your software, how many of the faults that you injected did you find versus how many other types of faults did you find? And it's that ratio that allows us then to find the total number of faults that are expected to be remaining in the software. So it's a way to find how many defects we have. It doesn't necessarily tell us whether these defects are critical or not, would cause system downtime or cause critical errors. It doesn't distinguish between major and minor, but it does give us a quantifiable way to identify how many defect bugs we have left to find. And there's many, many other terms and basic approaches to doing software testing. The beta testing is one that I remember a few years ago, Microsoft was launching one of their operating systems updates, and they were advertising that they were doing a beta test of this new operating system, and they would accept 1 million people to use the new program and be enrolled into their beta program. Now, Microsoft's operating systems are incredibly complex. And I know firsthand, internally, they do an extensive amount of testing and vetting of their software. But because of the complexity, they really aren't able to catch everything. So they go to the lengths of having 1 million installations do beta testing for them to help them find and ferret out the last of the failures that they can. Even given that, there's still bugs, and they still do updates to correct things as they go. But there's also ways of doing simulation and creating code that handles faults and keeps the system running, but isolates the effects of that particular fault if it can. It does a variety of different types of testing. One's called regression testing. Others, we can do stress testing, for example. As I know for communications type software, how many packets can it run? So let's run right at the limit or slightly above the rate that the software is rated for. So it's like a stress of any other kind of stress, but we're pushing it from a software perspective. So the rate of transactions that it has to handle, for example, all those kinds of things. So there's a heavy emphasis on getting this requirements right. And then a series of reviews and evaluations and different styles of testing. And whether it's firmware or hardware or firmware or user interface type software or what level of software it is, different types of testing and evaluations may be appropriate. And it's beyond what I really know much about. I just know that there's lots of ways to do it. And it really comes down to, can we create software and release it that provides a function consistently over time? And if it doesn't, it'll generate phone calls or corrections or upset customers. So it does impact our reliability performance for the system. In availability systems, software can easily take a system down, lock it up so that it requires a reboot. It might not take as long to repair as a hardware problem that we're waiting for parts on. In some cases, it does, though. It can be pretty serious. So software is becoming much more prevalent, and our ability to evaluate it and build it into our reliability block diagram, for example, is something that we need to know how to do as reliability professionals. So a good question to ask of your own organization is, what proportion of failures are due to software? Now, that might bring up the discussion of what exactly is a failure. And keep in mind that the customer defines failures. If they make a phone call or if they choose to buy your competitor's product, they probably experienced a failure of the functional performance to meet their expectations. But it also may have software bugs that just cause it to be a pain in the butt to operate. So take a serious look at software if you're not already, because it is a significant part of what the system's reliability performance is all about. So next, we'll take a look at products and product testing, looking at the whole picture and to some extent.